Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
I swear to God, this is better than anything on television.
Why can't we go to a movie?
A movie? That's not real. It's the same as television. Trust me, this is real.
Let me ask you to answer, since my time is ending here, the two other questions. Do you consider Roe v. Wade to be an abomination? And do you consider yourself to be a judicial nominee, like the president said he was going to nominate people in the mold of Scalia and Thomas?
Senator, on the question of Roe v. Wade, if confirmed to the D.C. Circuit, I would follow Roe v. Wade faithfully and fully. That would be binding precedent of the court. It's been decided by the Supreme Court.
Ask you your own opinion.
And I'm saying if I were confirmed to the D.C. Circuit, Senator, I would follow it. It's been reaffirmed many times, including in Planned Parenthood versus...
I understand, but what is your opinion? You're not on the bench yet. You've talked about these issues in the past to other people, I'm sure.
The Supreme Court has held repeatedly, Senator, and I don't think it would be appropriate for me to give a personal view on...
Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
You don't need a smug I told you so from me. And smug it would be, because tell you I most certainly did.
There's truth, but no logic.
From the Buy With Rob studio, located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about the laws of gravity, politics, news. Don't touch that dial, just try to hear me out for a while. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right. If everybody's wrong, what a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs, and they're carrying signs. Mostly say, hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody, look what's going down. Here's how you get a hold of me. Text machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, I'm on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on the web, podcast99.org, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and whatever web browser you use, even on the dark web. Eloqui conizio. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Well, I don't know how else to say it today. I'm probably going to piss you off. It doesn't matter which side you're on. I'm probably going to make you mad. Today is one of those, I'm calling it a Pablo Picasso of shows, because it's going to seem disjointed and all over the place, and it's going to seem like it makes no sense, but if you tie it all together at the end, then it will. Trust me. I know what I'm doing. The year was 1968. Do you remember that? Some of you will be old enough to remember it. Some of you will not be. If you are old enough to remember it, like me, you might have been a youngster at the time. I certainly was. There's an old saying, may you live in interesting times. And certainly 1968 was interesting times. What I remember about it, though, rather than the specific events of that year, was the reactions to those events. My mother crying in the living room when MLK was shot. My father's stoic sort of, I don't want to call it acceptance, but he wasn't a Kennedy guy, but he was you know, I mean, like everybody else, when Bobby Kennedy was shot, he was stunned. Nixon getting the nomination. My little brother saying, does he get the prize? And then they canceled Gilligan's Island. And it was like, holy crap, what else could go wrong in this world? What I remember most about it, though, was the sotto voce whispering of the adults. You know, you'd go to church or you'd go to some event somewhere and you'd be surrounded by adults who were friends with your parents or whatever. And the quiet conversations that they would have that were just loud enough for you to hear and understand the words, even if you didn't really understand the meanings. That sotto voce, we're losing our minds. This world is going crazy. This country is losing it. We've lost it. What's going on? And you had the feeling that something was wrong, but as an 8-year-old, well, actually I was 5, as a 5-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid, you kind of look at it and go, well, aren't we going to the moon next year? Good things are happening, right? We haven't completely fallen apart. I mean, if we have fallen apart, well, thanks a lot. I'm 5, and you're telling me that the world is losing it? What do I have to look forward to here? But, be that as it may, there was this sense that the world was coming apart at the seams and nobody could put their finger on why. Nobody could finger out what was going on or why these people thought this way. And boy, it didn't used to be this way, did it? You jump ahead, I don't know, 50 years. Is that right? Gosh, it's been 50 years. You jump ahead 50 years and you almost get that same feeling again, don't you? We're losing our minds. We're coming apart at the seams. What is going on here? How can this all be happening again? You look around the world, you look around the country. Let's focus on the country today, because if we tried to focus in the world, then we'd have to get into the Neymar role, and we'd have to get into other weirdness that's happening. Oh, by the way, we can't go past that without talking about the rescue of the Thai boys. Well done. Well done. Over the pragmatist, my wife this morning says, why were they in there in the first place? But, you know, be that as it may, they come bringing back to our country. You look at what's going on and you go, we're losing our minds. As a people, as a corporate functionality, not maybe you particularly, because nobody looks at themselves and going, hey, I'm falling apart. I don't know why I'm saying the things that I'm saying. Nobody looks at themselves and says, well, I'm the nutball here. Nobody does that. Everybody looks at everybody else and says that, and usually people who disagree with you. But as a corporate group, as a 320 million strong peoples, don't you have to look at us and go, what the hell is the matter with those people? What are they doing? Just some examples, just some things that have popped up in the news in the past few days, okay? Alex had the story there at the top of the hour about Starbucks. Starbucks is getting rid of plastic straws. Why are they doing this? Because they hurt the environment. Because plastic straws, I don't know if you knew this or not, are the leading cause, apparently, of pollution. According to the research, and I'm not making this number up, you're going to think I am, but I'm not. According to the research, as published by the people who did this, or I guess I should say the person who did this, 500 million plastic straws a day are finding their way into our garbage. Yeah, I'm not making that number up. That's the number that we're told, 500 million plastic straws a day, meaning that every American is using, what is it, 1.3, 1.4 straws per day? Maybe a little less, 1.2, somewhere in there. some of us aren't using any at all. So that means some of you are using a lot more than that, and you're just throwing these straws wimbly-nimbly into the water. No, that's the United States. 500 million a day. Now, if you're using a brain at all, you're looking at that number going, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And if you look at the actual research that was done to come up with this number, then you'll really be shaking your head. But in the meantime, we have at least one state, California, a city, Seattle, and now an entire billion-dollar worldwide industry that have said, that's it, plastic straws, they're of the devil. We must get rid of them. And they have passed laws, and they have changed company policies now to replace the plastic straw that is dirtying up the planet with plastic lids that you can drink from. Just let it sell. Just take it in, settle on it, think for a minute, and then go, oh, we're replacing the plastic straw with the plastic lid. Shake your head and go, we're losing our minds, aren't we? We're not thinking at all. Some people, as Alex said, some people have criticized that decision, and they've been brushed off with the old, look, it's the best we can do. So there you go. Yeah, that number, in fact, did come from a 9-year-old who was doing a science project of some sort, and nobody can verify that number, but it keeps getting repeated. So much so that even the city of Seattle put that number into their law, banning plastic straws. Let's see, what else? What else is happening here in the world today? Oh, this one was bizarre. This actually happened in London, but you know, you kind of get the, again, we're losing our minds mentality. So I don't know if you knew this or not, but last month was Pride Month. And so you have a lot of gay pride parades and stuff going on and around the world. But this particular gay pride parade was stopped by a group of 8 protesters. 8 protesters stopped a gay pride parade. Now you might be saying to yourself, well, what were they, anti-gay protesters? No, they were not. They were, in fact, lesbians. What were they protesting at the gay pride parade? Wait for it. And again, we're losing our minds. We're losing our minds. They were protesting the inclusion of transgendered men in the parade. Just let it settle for a second. Just let it trickle down and go, what? These screeching harpies who had to be hauled off in chains because they were interrupting the gay pride parade were lesbians who were protesting the idea that transgendered men, i.e. men who pretend to be women, were being included in the gay pride parade because, quote, trans activism erases lesbian, unquote. A man who says he's a lesbian is a rapist. We're losing our minds. We are going freaking wacko right now because even the things that we think we're protesting are being protested. And then you come to last night. Long before the president of the United States stood at the podium and took a few digs at some people and welcomed Edwin Meese to the event, long before anybody even had a hint of the name that he was about to announce, there were multiple people who said, well, I'm going to oppose it no matter who it is. I'm going to oppose that name just because I'm going to oppose that name. I don't even know who it is yet, but I know I'm against it. We're losing our minds. I got to be honest with you. If had I been President Trump, had it been President Dave last night, and I got wind of people like Schumer and others who made their comments about, well, I'm going to protest it no matter who it is. I would have had Steve Harvey come out with the envelope. I would have had him open the envelope and say, I hereby nominate Michelle Obama to the Supreme Court. It would have been funny. Admit it. It would have been hysterical. It would have been, you know, the Twizzlers commercial. There's nobody that wouldn't have laughed at that. There's nobody that wouldn't have thought that funny. Well, okay, maybe Michelle Obama wouldn't have, but you know what? It would have been amusing. I mean, and he could have said, no, I'm sorry, I'm at Columbia. We're losing our minds. Within moments of the announcement of the name, there are groups in the street. 1,000 people carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. And they're opposite of each other, so they're on opposite side of the streets. And they're yelling at each other. They're yelling to their groups, but they're yelling at each other. Oh, that guy's telling you a lie. No, that guy's saying something wrong. No, that guy's wrong. No, this guy's wrong. People against four. And then there's groups in the back that are arguing about whether those two groups are right. And nobody knows what the hell we're arguing over. Oh, I know. It's a Supreme Court nominee. I get it. Okay. We nominated a Supreme Court justice and automatically 47% of the country is going to hate that person no matter who it was. They could have nominated Jesus himself and people would have objected. Do you understand that? People would have said, it is wrong for the president to have a litmus test for nominees and I will oppose this nominee because they fail my litmus test. It wouldn't have mattered. You could have dug up George Washington, propped his drying, desiccated corpse up in front of everybody and said, I hereby nominate a dead president to be Supreme Court Associate Justice, and people would have freaked out. My God, he opposed the Whiskey Rebellion. He's anti-American. We've lost our minds. We've lost our minds. And what is it we're losing our minds over? What is it that is driving this entire thing? What is the litmus test? What is the one issue that apparently decides who can be a Supreme Court justice and who cannot be? Or more precisely, depending on which side you're on, which should be a Supreme Court justice and who should not be because of their opinion on this singular issue. This one thing. Is it the First Amendment right to practice your religion? Is it the First Amendment right to speak your mind? Is it the Second Amendment's right to keep and bear arms? Is it whether or not you have troops in your house or not, quartered? Is it whether or not the police officers can knock down your door without a warrant and just take things willy-nilly? Or whether or not you got an effective counsel for your defense? It's none of those things. Nobody cares. Nobody in the leadership of the United States gives a rat's behind about whether or not you have a First Amendment right to air your grievances against the government or not. The only thing that matters, the only thing that anybody seems to care about, or what they say they care about, is one thing and one thing only. Does a woman have a right to an abortion or not? Does Roe v. Wade, the settled law of the land, matter? Will you vote to overturn it, even though there's no case to do so, even though it is, well, nothing's impossible, but highly unlikely that you will ever hear a case to do so? Would you do so? How do you feel personally about it? We don't care what you've written about. We don't care about the fact that you've written a book about maintaining precedent. We don't care about any of that. We want to know what you think personally, because we all know that personally, you're going to let your personal feelings influence your personal decisions on the Supreme Court of the United States, just like we don't do as senators, because, you know, we never let our personal opinions get involved with anything, do we? We're losing our minds. We're going nuts. We're absolutely coming unglued. There's paranoia in the streets. Roe v. Wade, you got your Dave Bowman Book of Blessings here, because I'm gonna make a statement, and you're gonna want to remember this statement. Roe v. Wade is a Picasso of truths without logic. The entire ruling is a hodgepodge of arguments that don't really exist. You've heard other conservative chat show hosts tell you this. I guarantee you've heard it because I've listened to them and I've heard it too. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortion will not be outlawed. Right? You've heard him say that. I can give you the names of the people that have said it, but you don't really need me to tell you that Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, Michael Medved, have all said that in the past few days. As some kind of insurance. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortion will not become illegal. Right? Is that true? Is it in fact a fact? How would you know? How would you discuss this with your friends who are supportive of the Roe v. Wade decision, who are absolutely apoplectic that a man who has said repeatedly he would not vote to overturn Roe v. Wade will vote to overturn Roe v. Wade? Why is it? How did we reach the point in this country? We're losing our minds. How is it that we have reached the point where we will simply refuse to believe a Supreme Court justice, a judge, a legal professional, when they say, I won't do this, but we'll believe a politician who says, you can keep your whatever, I'm not going to raise taxes, we'll believe the politician, but we won't believe the judge. How did we get to that point? If we treated our politicians a lot more like we treat our judges, we'd be a lot better off, wouldn't we? But of course, it's the politicians who are treating the judges this way. It's the politicians who are putting these people on the hot seat and demanding of them their explanations, their reasonings, their thoughts. We want to mind meld with you and your thoughts. Give them to me so that I can know everything that will happen in the future, because that's what advise and consent means. Right? Oh, we're going to go through your record. We're going to go through your judicial record. How many cases have you been involved with on the D.C. Circuit Court? By the way, the D.C. Circuit Court, for those of you who don't know, second highest court in the land is what it's referred to as. We talked at great length about the D.C. Circuit Court back on the air when we were back on terrestrial radio. The D.C. Circuit Court was the reason for the nuclear option to begin with. Sorry, nuclear option. Back in those days, the Republicans were blocking three Obama nominees to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And this mattered because it was the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals that was going to hear the Obamacare case, which no matter what happened was going to end up in the Supreme Court anyway. So it didn't really matter. But there was this belief that if the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Obamacare, which it would do if it had three more Obama justices on it, those damn Republicans are blocking it, then it would become more unlikely that the Supreme Court would either A, hear it, or if they did hear it, B, overturn it, because, you know, this isn't some, you know, hokey pokey Second Circuit Court out in the middle of bumfuck Egypt. This is the D.C. D.C. Circuit Court, the second highest court in the land. But those Republicans wouldn't budge on those three nominees. And so Harry Reid dropped the nuclear bomb, and kaboom, he got his justices on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. In fact, it wasn't 24 hours after the bomb dropped that those three justices were on there, and of course, turned out to be kind of anticlimactic anyway. Well, Justice Kavanaugh is one of these judges. He's on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. He used to be a law professor hired by Elena Kagan at his university to teach. He's well-respected, well-regarded, with the exception of Chuck Schumer, who you heard at the beginning there, who's upset because he doesn't know what the personal opinion of the justice is. Let's see. The justice Catholic. He's very involved in the church. I'm just guessing here that unlike Nancy Pelosi, he actually believes what the church teaches. And so personally, he's probably against it. But he's said over and over again, as a man of honor and a man of the judge, that precedent is set. And he, like John Roberts, will not vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. Of course, it could be a lie, right? It could just be all falsehoods. And Chuck Schumer could be protecting the entire country from the Picasso of truth without logic that is Roe v. Wade. Why do I say that? Why do I say that Roe v. Wade is a Picasso of truth with no logic? Well, because it is. It's a bunch of things that we all accept as truth. We all accept that there is a right to privacy. Don't we? Is there anybody listening to this that would seriously argue that there is no right to privacy? Oh, by the way, it's not in the Constitution. Sorry, not there. You can look all you want. There's no right to privacy outlined in the Constitution of the United States, but we all believe it exists. We all believe in the doctor-patient relationship and the privacy of that relationship. We all believe that physicians should be allowed to practice medicine to the best interest of their patient. Is there anybody that doesn't believe that? It's not in the Constitution. Right? We all believe in due process, equal protection. We all believe in those things. And all these truths are found in the Roe v. Wade ruling. It's how they're applied that makes no logical sense to me anyway, but be that as it may, it actually kind of does make logic in a really perverse kind of way if you accept certain premises, which most people don't accept. And so the logic of the applicability of it goes like, what? You stand there and stare at it and you go, well, okay. And it's managed to become the defining division in this country. People will yell at each other. People will scream at each other. People will not refuse to talk to friends that they've had since childhood over Roe v. Wade and abortion. And at the end of the day, we're losing our minds. And we're about to see that, as if we didn't see it last night. We're about to see it in living color, as they once said on the TV. I got to take a quick break. Stay with us. It's the Dave Bowman Show right here on the Plaza, on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Listen live at podcast99.org.
Science Underground with your host, Anissa Ramirez.
This week, Spacesuit Secrets. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this is
Science Underground.
When you're in space, there isn't any air. So to survive, you're going to have to bring a spacesuit. What's in a spacesuit? First, there's an outer layer, which is the protective layer from micrometeoroids.
So it's a very tough layer that's designed to protect the astronauts from micrometeoroids that are whizzing about out in space.
That's John Malora, a systems engineer at ILC Dover, a company that makes spacesuits. Now, underneath that outer layer are...
And underneath that, there's numerous thermal layers, there's structural layers.
These layers keep astronauts warm and the suit strong. Under that layer is another layer that holds all the gas for astronauts to breathe. On Earth, air is made up of nitrogen and oxygen at a high pressure. But in a spacesuit, the gas is just oxygen, and the suit can't be at the same pressure as on Earth, because otherwise the astronauts would look like...
It kind of looks like Maggie Simpson when she has her snowsuit on.
Now, under that layer that holds all the oxygen is...
The liquid cooling ventilation garment, that's actually a bodysuit that they wear that has real thin tubing running through it, that has water flowing through it, that allows them to either cool or heat themselves depending on what they're doing.
But there's one more layer that we just don't mention in those macho space movies, and this layer is particularly important if you drank too much Tang that morning.
One of the first layers that they put on underneath their suit is actually an adult-sized diaper, and it's called the MAG, the Maximum Absorbency Garment. It takes quite a while to get into the spacesuit, and obviously when you're out on a mission, you can't just call a timeout and head back into the space station. Not many people talk about it, but that's what's there while they're on their spacewalks, so they can be out there for up to 8 to 10 hours.
Maximum absorbent undergarments. That's the spacesuit secret. Well, we certainly got to the bottom of this. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this was
Science Underground.
Here's the snap. It's a handoff to Rocky Carr. He breaks the tackle. He's at the 40, the 30, the 20. He caught the ball.
Not so fast, Rocky. Did you remember to register with Selective Service within 30 days of your 18th birthday?
No.
Oh, too bad. Rocky Carr is stopped just short of the goal line. What do you make of that, Chet?
Well, Al, the law says that every man must register with Selective Service within 30 days of his 18th birthday. Now, Rocky could have registered online at www.sss.gov or at his local post office. Hey, it's the fundamentals, Al, and Rocky just didn't get it done.
You're right, Chet. That's got to be a big disappointment for a young man who had such a promising future. Let's see that again on instant replay.
Let's not, Al. It's pretty painful to watch.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Today we decided to walk to school.
The light counted. 15, 14, 41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I realized
he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
You are listening to The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Tis I, Dave. On a Tuesday, unless you're listening on podcast, then it could be a Thursday. I don't know. You're listening live on the podcast99.org webpage or on the YouTube channel. It is Tuesday, July 10th. It is Ben's 8th birthday. He's pretty excited. So, again, I'm going to say some things that are going to seem angering to some of you, and it doesn't really matter which side you're on. I assume that most of the people who listen to this are to the political right of things, and that's fine. I don't necessarily pick my audience. I don't really target my thoughts at a specific audience. I'm not trying to be a conservative icon. That's not what I'm trying to be. I'm trying to tell you what I think about things as I watch them. And sometimes what I think about things is highly conservative. Sometimes it veers into the alt-right. Sometimes I'm moderate, and sometimes I'm even a little bit left. This is about what I think, not what I want you to think, not what I'm telling you, my Myrmidons, to think about any given subject. I love it when I get emails from people who say, you're making me think. Good, because that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm doing myself. I'm a former instructor. I'm a former Navy teacher. And I discovered a long time ago that I learn best by talking about things, to talk things through. And sometimes it happens on occasion. Now, normally, I try to be, you know, before the show, I try to at least have an idea where I'm going. Sometimes right in the middle of the show, you'll see the light bulb go on in my head and I'll go, oh, that's how that works. That's what I think about that. This hasn't been one of those moments so far, but I can tell you that it wasn't that long ago that the light bulb kind of went on. You know, we always talk about we need to talk to the other side, and nobody's doing that right now. Nobody is talking to the other side. We spoke last week about, or 2 weeks ago, about does anybody take the time to figure out why the other side thinks the way it does? Do you ever ask them? Whatever I think of abortion, personally, is it possible that someone else feels the opposite way and has valid reasons for doing so? Is it possible? Is it conceivable that my position might not fit every 319,999,999 other Americans' opinions and positions on things? Is it possible that the other side isn't necessarily, you know, demon spawn because they don't think like I do? And if I took the time to ask them why they feel that way, might I find some reason for doing so? Now, to be clear, I find abortion morally repellent. That's my position on abortion. But I'm not going to have one. I'm a libertarian. I'm not going to do that because that's my position on it. When Ben was in gestation, we had many discussions about some of the things that could go wrong. We did the amniotesis test. I'm probably butchering that word because there were concerns. I was, you know, old, and Cammy was not, this was her fifth kid. And so there were concerns about things that could go wrong. And the discussion went something to the effect of, well, this test will tell us if there are any potential problems. And then we agreed that even if there were problems, we didn't care. We weren't going to do that because neither of us felt that that was the right thing to do. I come from a family that has a history with Down syndrome. My baby sister, for those of you who don't know, 10 years younger than me, is Down syndrome, severely Down syndrome. You know, you see these Down syndrome actors and things like that. Nowhere near even that. She is, I don't even know how the words to describe it. Not only is she Down syndrome, but she had massive internal problems that required surgeries when she was like 6 or 7 days old. And we were assured that she wasn't going to survive the first week. And then we were assured that she wasn't going to live a year. And then we were assured that she wasn't going to live 5 years. And then it turned into 10 years. And then about 8, 9 years ago, she got hauled off to the hospital at Cedars-Sinai. And they assured us that we needed to come because this was going to be it. And we're getting ready to celebrate her 45th birthday. She just doesn't seem to get that she's not supposed to be here. And my parents have long held this plaque on their wall about this conversation between God and the angels. My parents are very religious people. And the conversation is about, I've got a very special child that needs a very special place to go, and how God chooses them for this honor of having her. I don't look at abortion as, you know, I mean, sure, it would have been an option, but think of all the things we would have missed out on. Think of all the struggles and the difficulties and the hard times and the ways we had to change our family life and the things that have happened downstream. Think all that stuff we would have missed. It would have been the easy choice, and it would have been the simple choice, and in many people's case, it would have been the proper choice. I mean, look how much money she has cost because she's obviously disabled and she's on Social Security. And these millions of dollars that have been spent on her life might have been spent better elsewhere, would be the argument. Why should the taxpayer have to come up with this? I've heard those arguments. But for us and for my parents, it wasn't an option. And for Cammie and I, it was not an option. And, you know, we're blessed. Things didn't turn out that way. Ben has some physical problems. I don't know if you knew that or not. He has very bad eczema that is probably caused, I'm told, by the fact that he was cesarean and not born the normal way. Because apparently there's something that happens when they go through the birth channel that there's some kind of coating or something that they spray on as they're coming. I don't know. That they don't get when they're cesarean, and so they're susceptible to other allergies and things like that. Anyway, we've been through moments where Ben, where we weren't sure what was going on. For me, that is my position. But I know people who have made the other decision to say, I can't do this. There are dogmas within politics that say, well, I have to condemn them. There are religious people that say, I must condemn them for making a decision with which I disagree. Even though I'm not them, I don't have their feelings, I don't have their experiences, I don't have any knowledge of what's going through their mind, I must condemn them without ever asking, why do you feel that way? And could it be that those people are some of the people who are leading the argument that says we need to be against this? Could that be? Could that be the case? Is it possible that that could be happening? Well, of course it is. And the argument goes, well, this justice will overturn Roe v. Wade. And he will make it illegal. He will make it a crime to make the decision to terminate a pregnancy for reasons that are between myself and my doctor, which you admit is private, which you acknowledge is my decision and my doctor's recommendation. And we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We do know that, we know that the odds are there's 320 million Americans, and half of them are women, basically, and then half again are adults. So what is that? It wasn't doing the math. 150 million. So 75 million women of, you know, age. The odds alone tell us that somebody's going to have a bad outcome in a pregnancy, right? Are they right to be afraid that they're right to make that decision might be taken away from them? Now, again, I don't believe that the court is going to overturn Roe v. Wade. You would have a hard time convincing me of that fact. You would have a hard time convincing me that there's a case out there because, number one, who would have standing in such a case? Who would bring a case that says, I wasn't forced to have an abortion, so Roe v. Wade must be overturned? Now, the flip side of that is there could be limitations placed on abortions because of new scientific things. You know, what was the case in 1973 when we said third trimester? We now know from 1992 and from on that, you know, viability happens much earlier than the third trimester. And maybe the court looks at that and goes, well, we should overturn this. You have heard over and over again, Rush Limbaugh has said it, Sean Hannity has said it, Michael Medved has said it, that Roe v. Wade doesn't have anything to do with abortions, it's about states' rights. It just throws it back to the states. That's all it does. It doesn't outlaw abortion. It just throws it back to the states. Right? You've heard that. I've heard it, so I know you have. Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Dakota, South Dakota have all already passed. It's on their books in the states. What are known as trigger laws. Do you know what a trigger law is? A trigger law, much like the California state budget has budget triggers, is something that happens if this happens, then this takes place. These laws in those states are specific. Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North and South Dakota. If Roe v. Wade is overturned in our states, abortion becomes illegal. Period. Gone. Additionally, many states, so many states that I don't even have a list of them all, never repealed their pre-1973 laws that criminalized abortion. It is a well-established fact that some of those statutes, not all of them, but some of them, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, what happens with those statutes that are still on the books? In those states, abortion becomes illegal. Other states, California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, Nevada, and Washington, have already passed laws that say if Roe v. Wade is overturned, we will still permit it. Ta-da! To say that it simply throws it back to the states is to ignore the realities that there are states that will ban it. There are states that will not. And then you're back in the Supreme Court again, you're back in the court system again because equal protection and due process. As an American citizen, do I have a right? Well, do I have a right to get married in California if I don't in Texas? You can see where this is going to go. These states that have said these trigger laws will go into effect are, in fact, simply throwing this back into the courts under the concept of the 14th Amendment's due process and equal protection. That's all they're doing. And how is a court, how does an originalist court, because that's, you know, apparently where we're headed, look at that and say, well, you're right. This is a state's rights issue. Without impacting anything else, without impacting everything else. It's unrealistic. It's the word I'm looking for. Oh, yeah, not going to happen. And yet, we're out in the streets throwing rocks at each other and throwing barbs and insults and anything else you can name because nobody's thinking. Everybody's just carrying signs. Hooray for our side. Everybody prefers the outrage because outrage gives us something to cling to. Right? We're all about this anger. We're all about demonizing the opposition. We're all about arguing that the other side is bad. And as long as we have that to hang on to, we've got a purpose in life, don't we? Don't we have a realization that everything then is revolves around whether or not we're trying to argue with that other side or not? They must be wrong, even though intellectually we know that may not necessarily be the case. There may be truths. Even if there is no logic. And if there are truths, then we need to understand them. And we need to accept that other people don't see things the way we see them. The alternative is to just hang on to our hatred. We must hate. We must despise. We must destroy the other side. Right? And how better to do that than by calling them names? Oh, we'll just call you names. On the right, we like the term socialist. We like to call people on the left socialists, progressives, communists. on the left, they like terms like racist and Nazis and fascists and that sort of thing, but it's all the same attitude, isn't it? Because the Nazis were really leftists, not rightists, and it was the left that was really racist, not the Nazis. You get bizarre with this whole thing. And you shake your head and you go, wait, we're replacing straws with plastic lids to help the environment? Once upon a time, there were a bunch of immigrants who were refugees from a country that had been torn apart by war and pestilence. And these refugees had nowhere to go. And the president of the United States called up the governor of California and said, hey, can you take 5,000 of these refugees? And the governor of that state said, absolutely not, no way, no how, we're not going to take those people because we don't care about them as much as we care about our citizens. It's a historical fact. Governor Jerry Brown refused to accept Vietnamese refugees and made comments to the effect that he'd rather take care of his own people first. We're losing our minds. We're crazy, but we've got that hatred because it's the other side. There's a story that's told about a man who hated his father. There aren't really even words to describe the depth of the hatred of his father. And for many years, he hated his father beyond belief. And then came the day when his mother died. He went to the funeral. He went to the graveside. And he stood stoically and never shed a tear one when his mother passed away. And he continued in his life with the hatred of his father, the screaming matches, the refusal to accept anything positive could possibly come from his father. And then his dad died. And the man was inconsolable. He cried copiously for days. He had to be supported at the funeral because he was just falling apart. He was sobbing. There are any number of lessons you can draw from that. The man who told this story told it because he wanted the person he was telling it to understand that hatred only goes so far. And when the object of your hatred is removed, if you have nothing else to live for, what does your life become? If everything you do is wrapped up in your hatred of something or someone else, and someday you find that something else is gone, what are you going to do then? What's going to be the guiding principle of your life? What's going to become the focal point? What the hell are you going to do? Everything you've done is about hating rather than living. I think Vicini said something to the same effect in The Princess Bride. 20 years is a long time. There's not much money in revenge. I need to find something else to do. I need to find something else to focus on because this isn't getting me anywhere. Hatred as well as love renders its votaries credulous. We're willing to believe anything without thinking whatsoever about what the other side is saying, or what they might mean, or what might be applicable. And I speak not only to the left today and your insane ramblings, I speak to us on the right as well. And our insane ramblings and unwillingness to accept that there might be other truths. Unless we can get together and accept that there are truths and find out where the logic is and how to apply all of this stuff logically, we're in danger of being that man. And when the object of our hatred goes away, we will have nothing left to live for. We're in grave danger of that. And it might behoove us to step back a little bit and think about things and think about the ways we're doing them and think about the ways that we can do them differently. Or we can continue down the road we're on, screaming and yelling about something that hasn't happened, isn't likely to happen, but it gives us something to focus our anger and our hatred upon. Judge Kavanaugh is just one more cog in the wheel. Reality is, there are a lot of other things we could be worried about. What the Supreme Court is going to do. Judge Kavanaugh has some really, in my view, questionable views about the Fourth Amendment. Why worry about that? Why worry about the government busting down your house or invading your private space and taking stuff? Why worry about that? I'd rather worry about what the other side, some other person, thinks about Roe v. Wade. We're losing our minds. 1,000 people in the streets, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say, hooray for our side. Not a handshake one in between. I gotta get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show. Right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You can hear us every weekday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time live and by podcast at our website, thedavebowmanshow.com, or at podcast99.org, where we have great shows for you. Jay's This Week in U.S. Politics, The Ale Evangelist, Tim Preuss, and some others that are in the works and will be with us fairly soon. Coming up next, we got Tim Preuss. He's going to talk more about Judge Kavanaugh. I think he's going to get more into the technical side of things than I did, but I'll tell you, this is what I think. This is what my show's about, what I think. I offended you? I'm not sorry. It's time for you to consider that there may be other truths out there in the big, wide, wonderful world. See you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.
Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.